Hey, welcome back to Switchcast Live. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast where we are searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry and tightening our microphones while we're live on camera. That's right, if it ain't true, it better be funny. Here we have automotive wisdom with a side of sarcasm, or vice versa, depending on our weekly snark level.
And microphones not set up properly by producer Ethan, who's slacking today.
No, I think it's just the head of finances for the podcast, Doug, who is too cheap to buy like real good mics.
So I want to point out I am literally on my knees here getting the Instagram stream set up, and I'm getting chastised by Tyler. So
hey, listen, the number one podcast in the world has very low production quality. So we're here for the entertainment, the fun, and what we learn, not for being incredibly polished, although we do try our best to give everybody a very good show. Speaking of good show, we just got back from Florida where the Amelia Island auction happened. We'll get into the Concours and, of course, all of the auctions down there. The same weekend as RM Sotheby's started their new Moda Miami show out of essentially spite. So we're going to dig into that a little bit later and unpack the numbers and some observations and see how that turned out for all parties involved. Lots of multimillionaires fighting by making car shows.
I mean, we benefit in some sense, don't we? More car shows.
I guess so, yeah. Can't go to all of them at once, though.
Yeah, if they could be spiteful on separate weekends, that'd be great.
Yes. We're going to get into some crazy EV leases later. I'm Mr. Dave Ramsey in terms of being anti-lease. You all know I'm anti-EV, but I might actually endorse an EV lease. So stick around to see how that pans out. I haven't actually decided how I feel about it yet. Let's see. We'll start out with a good one. Today marks the third time since starting this podcast that someone has threatened to sue me because of something true that I said. So right now I am under the cloud of a threat of a defamation / slander lawsuit because of my VinWiki video today. And we actually covered this probably a year ago on the podcast as well with Direct Auto Tennessee. And they took a lot of customers' monies in not honest ways, essentially fraudulent ways. The stories are endless. They were selling cars with liens on them still, not paying off the liens. They were allegedly floor planning cars that weren't owned by them, so like either consigned or like the guy had a partner in the business that was buying cars with his own money. And of course, you put the title in the dealer name, and then, you know, the other partner would get a floor plan loan against those titles, and they weren't even his. What else did we hear? I guess there's one guy that bought a Jeep and traded in a Ford Raptor. And he had a loan on the bought a Raptor, traded in the Jeep. Anyway, he had a loan on his trade-in, which Direct Auto never paid off, and then sold it to somebody else. So the previous owner of this car got essentially a repo notice for this car that he had traded in because it wasn't paid off. But then he also financed the Jeep that he bought, or the Raptor that he bought, whichever one it was. And that car was never paid off either. So I guess he got that car repoed as well, and he financed it, but he financed it with a different bank. So like two banks have a loan against this car. So he's got two cars that are repoed, no car, and still, I mean,
how do you keep track of all this? I'm getting stressed out just sitting here.
Anyway, so, you know, I've learned something over the course of doing this podcast. I'm not a psychologist, but I've learned some things about psychology and some things about narcissists. And I feel like this is narcissism at its finest, and we've seen this a few different times. But when you're caught in a lie or a big scam, the proper response, according to the narcissism playbook, is to play the victim card. somebody else wronged me. This is not my fault. And Charles from Direct Auto is playing that card that, oh, his family cut him off and, you know, he had no control of the finances or anything like that. We're seeing that with Art from EAG, his response to his investors stealing stuff from him in the middle of the night. You know, he essentially compared himself to Steve Jobs and, you know, cried on camera and stuff like that. We saw it with Fred Ashmore with the cannonball fraud, and he just doubled down and, oh man, I'm this victim of this, you know, these rich guys doing cannonball. I'm not part of the clique. So they decided to, you know, out me. And I'm like, no, dude, it's 'cause you lied. You lied. So speaking of EAG, and I do want to follow up on this too. So we talked about EAG last week. That is not Enthusiast Auto Group, not the BMW store in Cincinnati. I want to make that real clear. This is European Auto Group in Texas, the company that does these stick shift conversions. If you missed that, go back, listen to last week's episode. It's decent. You can find those past episodes on switchcast.live. But I had a conversation with Dan from Normal Guy Supercar today. And he was involved with EAG. And we made a little bit of fun of him last week for entertainment value. But we didn't go into like really deep into the facts of what happened. But Dan essentially claimed that EAG owed him like $700K because he was owed a $2,000 royalty for every kit that they sold for marketing. Now, that was a brief overview of what we knew to be the case or what we had just observed. It was not the entire picture. So Dan unpacked it a little bit more for me. So he had actually invested with Art, who's the founder of EAG, about $250,000. And when these new investors came in, they essentially bought him out. So he got the majority or all of his initial investment back, but no profit. So like part of the deal was because he had helped Art get from like nothing to where he was is, okay, you know, I want my profit, my payment to be in the form of royalties. And those never happened. So it wasn't as simple as just, oh, I'm owed money for marketing. It was, you know, the royalties and the continued marketing. So, and he gave me some more insight into what was going on in terms of just breach of contract and stuff like that with Art and what the investors knew or thought. And there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes where Art was mismanaging money and the business and, you know, it's really sad to see, but the investors made sure there's like a backlog of 70 cars that, customers needed. And the new investors made sure that all those 70 cars got finished and they stopped taking new orders before they went in and took everything. So it appears that they had customers' interests in mind when all this went down, which is, I think, admirable. Again, not knowing the whole situation, for investors to be concerned with customers getting their deliveries and not having 70 customers tied up in a legal battle. Like, I mean, it protects their own interest too, because that's a lot of lawsuits. But anyway, I think that's going to continue to shake out. And I believe Dan did a more extensive deep dive video on it. So if you're interested in following along with that drama, go check out Normal Guy Supercar. And again, thanks to Dan for reaching out and giving me a little bit more insight. We do try to do as much research as possible before we talk about some of this shady shenaniganry. We're not always able to dig into everything because some of this stuff is kind of as it's happening. But we do try to verify everything that we say. And if we can't verify it, we say, this has not been verified. Hence, we said scams and rumors in the car business last week. There's another big rumor that we're working on. Big, big rumor. But we want to tread carefully. And I'm not going to say anything until we get some more news and some more concrete stuff. But this could be a big one in terms of a shakeup with a big dealer in the industry. So maybe next week, maybe next year, we'll have some more things. But Stay tuned.
Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose, and that is to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcars.com/boxcast for your free trial. And we've got Hank, the Corvette curmudgeon, back in studio with us this week. Good evening, Hank.
Hey, Tyler.
So you went with us to Amelia Island this past weekend.
I did. Yeah, my back's still hurting from that trip.
Why is it from the car ride or?
Probably because you made me ride in that stupid Porsche of yours. Those seats aren't too good. It's hard to get in and out of. And yeah, just so much walking.
Oh, God, there was a lot of walking.
I forgot the orthopedic inserts for my New Balances, and my back's paying the price this week.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry to hear that. But did you enjoy the trip? Did you enjoy going to the Concours?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It's pretty good. A lot of people there.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
So speaking of
expensive friggin' $10 for a drink, too. Mm.
You only paid $10. I paid $20 for a gin and tonic at one of the auctions.
Well, thankfully, I didn't pay anything because, Switchcast was paying for stuff. I thought that was very generous. I just couldn't believe it.
You know, that would be
very
generous.
I would have brought my own drink and then pocketed the money.
Give you a little stipend or something. Ethan, we got to talk about this. This is getting a little ridiculous.
Sorry, man.
I paid $20 for a gin and tonic.
I didn't know he was going to talk.
So speaking of a lot of people, Hank, you were recognized quite a bit. You met some people that wanted to talk to you and are happy to see you. How did you feel being recognized in public for what you do here?
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit odd.
Odd? Why is that?
Well, I don't know. I try to stay under the radar. Yeah. I'd rather people be interested in my Corvette. I did get a lot of chances to tell people how rare my Corvette was, though.
That was
neat. They seemed genuinely interested.
Especially that one guy that walked up while we were looking at the cars behind the Ritz-Carlton for the auction, and he came up and just wanted to talk to you about his Corvette, but you corrected him very quickly that yours was the more interesting car.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about his Corvette. There weren't many Corvettes there this weekend.
What about that one, the C3 pace car that was in Broad Arrow?
Yeah, 1978 pace car, yep. That was pretty stinking expensive. $50,000 to $75,000 was the estimate on that thing. Goodness gracious.
Goodness.
And it wasn't even one of the rare pace cars. It was a 78 pace car. They made like 7,000 of them. But my Corvette's rarer than that pace car, which is saying a lot.
Do you know how much that went for?
No, I didn't.
It looked
pretty good, though. Apparently, it only had like 300 miles on it. But you can't say it's never seen rain because it was raining while we were out there.
Yeah, it rained on that car a bunch.
Which is amazing, because all those people have fancy, dancy cars out there, they were all getting rained on. I've never taken my Corvette out in the rain. I couldn't believe what they were subjecting their cars to.
You don't like... I like seeing expensive cars like that in the rain, because it makes them more real, more human, I guess, for lack of a better thing. You don't like seeing that?
No.
Alrighty. So that pace car sold for $47,500.
That's a lot of money.
That's so much. And the buyer paid in the mid-50s after the fees and all that.
Probably would have gone for 70 if it had never seen rain.
That's right.
So of the whole weekend, we did a lot of stuff. Obviously, there was a lot of walking. What was your favorite part of the entire weekend?
I can't remember. My back hurts too much.
We'll need to get you some meds for that. Ethan, maybe you can buy him some Tylenol or something.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go home now and lay down on my heated mattress, heated pad things.
Yeah. Before you go, though, Alan Hall on YouTube says that meeting Hank was the highlight of Amelia Island for him. So you've got lots of fans out there.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with him, but thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Hank. Go lie down and rest up. That was the Corvette Curmudgeon, everybody, brought to you unwittingly by the Corvette Buy Sell Trade Group on Facebook. That is your source for cranky boomers, overpriced Corvettes, and reinforced stereotypes. I can't believe somebody paid $47,000 for that pace car.
It did have 300 miles on it.
It was very soggy.
real collectors don't care about that stuff. So I, if Hank didn't have to leave so early, I wonder what his take would have been on this. This was submitted by our friend of the podcast and friend in real life, Larry Cates, from Hemmings.com. Seized for service. 2022 Chevrolet Corvette joins Florida police fleet in Panama City Beach. They seized this Corvette in a drug bust, and now the speedy sports car is an important part of their vehicle fleet. It was previously owned by a 25-year-old that took a few wrong turns. Oh, the play on word. He was reportedly found guilty for carrying illegal narcotics and firearms after attempting to flee the scene. I think this is kind of cool. Here's my only problem with this. Here's my only problem. Not being a lawyer, but just understanding that this type of language can open up some dangerous violations of rights. It was impounded by the police under Florida's Contraband Forfeiture Act, which, quote, provides law enforcement the right to seize property related to criminal and non-criminal law violations.
Non-criminal law violations. What is that?
I don't know, and that's why
seems
it's concerning.
Very vague.
Like, I mean, that's not from the statute. This is the quote from the article on Hemmings, but just the fact that that even exists, right? Like, okay, yes, you traffic in drugs, you do big crimes, absolutely have your stuff seized, not necessarily for the benefit of the police department, but it's like if I'm out there speeding and they're like, oh, you're speeding too much, I'm just going to take your car. That is not an appropriate punishment.
Yeah, and a lot of there seems to be numerous laws across the country or statutes or whatever legal language it is that allows this to happen. And it's a little, it causes a bit of discomfort because right. If you get on the wrong day with the wrong person, some really, they could do some pretty serious stuff in retaliation to maybe a less than serious crime.
The other, I think the bigger problem is the incentivization, right? So if the police department is seizing this stuff, and this is one of the big issues with civil asset forfeitures, a lot of departments get a kickback. So if they seize a bunch of cash, they submit it to the feds, but then they get 80% of it back. I think it was Texas or something like that. That's how their law works. So if you seize $100,000 in cash, the department gets $80,000 as a finder's fee, essentially.
It's a pretty good deal.
And I'm like, yeah, right? So it's like, oh, man, you were going a little fast. We have a law that says we can impound your car and keep it, not just impound it, seize it because of street racing. Oh, I think you were street racing.
That's so stupid.
And then it says later in the article that you're referencing that it will likely be auctioned later when the needs to cycle out of the fleet. So not only are they getting to tool around in a car and parade this around and whatever, but they're just going to get the cash from it anyway.
I'd like to buy it.
If they keep the livery on.
I'm not going to lie.
Our
local department has a long ago seized Corvette C5 police car, and I really, really want it.
That doesn't have a light bar on the top, does it?
No, it's all built-in lights.
I love the older style, like, seized cars. They mostly ended up as dare cars, as far as I can remember, that are like Camaro Z28s and Mustangs and stuff with like big old light bars on top with classic paint jobs. Like, makes me think of Need for Speed as a kid. I'm like, that's what I want to be chasing me is like a Corvette or something.
Right. There's actually a like screen grab from a video in which I was following the Twinsburg Police Corvette C5. In my C5, and there may have been some spirited wheel turning in relation to the pavement, and the screen grab from the video literally looks like a scene from Need for Speed. I mean, it is nostalgia on steroids. Like, I download it, I'm like, oh, yes.
Oh, man.
So as a car guy, as a supporter of police and law and law enforcement in general against criminals, I'm like, okay, I love this. I just, there's a line, and we have to also make sure to not allow that those laws to kind of overstep their bounds or violate people's rights, including criminals' rights.
Yes.
So, yeah. I had another thought. Oh, so when I worked at Land Rover Akron 20 years ago, the Summit County Sheriffs had like a 1998 or 2000 Range Rover that they had seized. Oh. And it was, I think it was a dare car as well. But I think that the service department saw it more than it saw service.
Classic like, Land Rover.
It was there all the time. And I only worked there for 5 months and it was there all the time. It was probably like the biggest line item on their department's budget was the free Range Rover.
We do have a super chat from Taillight Express that just says, thank you, Hank. So we'll have to tell him, and hopefully that can pay for part of his drinks that he apparently got down at Amelia.
Yeah. Or his painkillers. Yeah,
his heated blanket.
He's probably going to be real cranky with Margaret tonight. Oh, man.
You got to adjust those seats just right, because I complained about my back a little bit on the way down. Those of you that don't know, Doug and I drove down a 997 this year, and if you don't get the seats right in 911s, I've found they can really hurt your lower back. But you got to get it just reclined just right.
Yeah, I think it was the mattress in the rental house, but yeah. Oh, either way, I'm in a lot of pain. So is Hank. All right. So speaking of Amelia, we do want to unpack this a little bit. So let's see. First of all, let's talk about the auction results. So what did we learn from auctions? There's a few cars that I want to touch on to kind of get some takeaways from buying at collector car auctions. We'll say at every collector car auction, there's probably 100 or 200 cars that these auctions sell. And there's probably like 3 to 4 really great deals. But you have to know what you're looking at, and you never know until the hammer falls whether or not they're going to be a good deal. So you got to stick through it. The deals I identified was a 19—it was an early Maserati 3500 GT. It might have been a 50-something. And the estimate there was $175 to $225. And it sold for a measly, well, it hammered for $130,000. However, I did not have my fellow Maserati 3500 GT owner and expert on that, Mark, Chuck Loper, look it over. So with any apparent deal at auction, you have to actually know what you're getting, whether or not it was really a deal, because you can also say, well, somebody else in the room or everybody else in the room knew something I didn't, right? So I wouldn't be so foolish as to just go up there and be like, man, 130, that's cheap. Yeah, 140. Because everybody else may be...
they'll be laughing at you.
Right. Another one was a Jaguar XJ220 with 620 miles on it, and it hammered for $480,000. Now, that wasn't necessarily a low sale. It was in relation to the estimate, but I just think those cars are undervalued. So I don't know. There's a lot of reasons why people say they don't like them and why they haven't taken off. Maintenance costs, the fact that it's a 6-cylinder instead of a V12, and it supposedly sounds like a bucket of bolts when it's running, and you know, things like that, the reason that people didn't buy them when they were new. But it's still a 220 mile an hour iconic and rare 90s supercar.
It just oozes 90s. It's so cool.
Speaking of Need for Speed.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the 90s supercars are skyrocketing in value, and the Jaguar XJ220 is just like $500,000 stuck there. So I think that was a deal.
I want to see someone drive them. Like, we see so many of these, you and I were talking down there, that have no miles, hundreds or like low thousands. Like, I want somebody to drive one of these enough that the maintenance is worth it.
Yep. The not deal of the week was a 2010 Aqua Blue GT3. 6,000 miles, one or two owners, and there's a very, very good lesson here. even though these are highly reputable collector car auctions, that doesn't mean you're getting a good car. You still are required to do your homework. All the service records for the car were posted. It was, the description focused heavily on how rare the color was, on how rare the car was, on how rare GT3s were, the rare options like dynamic engine mounts and sport bucket seats. But we went out and looked at the car prior to the auction. And let's just say I was interested in bidding on it before I looked at it and not after.
And it's what amazed me is how quickly you flipped. All it took was just a, not even an intense look, just a purposeful look at this car. And you're like, nope.
Yeah. Yeah. The front rotors were absolutely smoked on a 6,000 mile car. The interior had more wear than it should. But the biggest issue was that the front gap between the door and the front fender on both sides was about twice as wide at the bottom as it was on the top.
Like, it was substantial.
Yes.
Fit a tube of toothpaste in there.
And that was enough for me to just go, nope. So the funniest thing was, right? So all the metrics on that car are correct, right? 6,000 miles, one or two owners, right? Low miles, rare colors, rare color. So we walk away going, we didn't learn anything. We already knew this, is that those metrics don't mean a thing. Again, go back and listen to our old episode about the 10 questions you don't need to ask when you're buying a car. I've beat this topic to death and people still don't get it. As we're walking away, we walk past, I think it came in GT4, and we overhear somebody looking at it going, oh man, one owner and only 1,800 miles. It's got to be perfect. And I'm just like, I wanted to scream, that means nothing. Go look at that GT3. Oh, like, people can't actually look at cars. They just go, oh, here's all the things in my head that tell me this car is good, so I can't see the flaws. And we were even next to somebody looking at it, and they were asking me, like, oh, what do you see? What do you see? And I pointed out everything, and they were like,
He was were talking for a while, and he really wanted this car. He told us how he had a white one that he sold, and he regretted it ever since. And this one, he loves the color, he's super into it, and you changed his mind. He's like,
yeah. But overall, takeaways from the auction. So the biggest, I guess, quote unquote drama there, which really doesn't affect anybody going, but just from stepping back and looking at it, is the backstory is a few years ago, Hagerty bought out the Amelia Island auction from Bill Warner. They also bought Broad Arrow Auctions. Previously, RM Sotheby's was the official auction house of the Amelia Island auctions, and they were on site right there in the Ritz-Carlton. There's a couple other auctions that are off-site, and you know, people hit them up, but you know, there's a big value in being the auction on site. Well, my understanding of it is Hagerty effectively just canceled RM's lease or their agreement to be there because Hagerty wanted their auction house to be there. Reasonable, but not if there's an agreement in place. So the head of RM, out of spite or retaliation or whatever, the things that you can do when you're a multimillionaire, said, screw you guys, I'm going to have an auction and a Concours in Miami the exact same weekend. So this was the first year where the two multi-bajillionaires went head to head. From a business and a number standpoint, how did it pan out? Well, there is speculation that it cost Rob, the owner of RM, approximately $10 to $15 million to pull this off. Like, that was his net loss over the weekend to compete with Hagerty and the Amelia. That's what I've heard. It must be nice to have that kind of money that you can spend $15 million on a battle of egos. Although I'd like to think that if I had that kind of money, I'd be humble enough to not do that.
You could get a couple F-50s for that.
Right. Yes.
Spoiler alert.
The argument can be made, though, that he didn't get to where he is without that ego.
Like, yeah, that, also true.
That type of personality is what drives and what makes a lot of people that successful. But in terms of prices, prices appeared in Amelia at the auction to be quite strong still on the cheaper stuff, we'll say. So sub 500 grand. The multi-million dollar stuff in most aspects, most niches, was falling short. We saw some that were a million below the low estimate on like $3 to $4 million cars. Other than that pre-war car that sold for a record $12 million.
Oh, that was that very early Mercedes at Gooding, right? Yes. That was like
Mercedes Simplex.
The first cars. It was a 1901 or something like that. Bonkers.
Yeah. So that set a record. But other than that, the multi-million dollar cars are falling short. But the lower stuff was strong. But overall numbers were great. Sell-through numbers were great. According to Haggerty, Broad Arrow sold 92%. Overall, Gooding sold $67 million. Broad Arrow sold $63 million. Both of those were in Amelia. RM down in Miami sold $50 million. So not quite as good. And they were the premier auction house prior to that. So not bad for a first year. Broad Arrow doubled their sales from last year. And from a spectator perspective, I think Amelia Island won. There was 27,000 people in attendance, a record number, and there was only 8,000 people in Miami.
Wow. Honestly, we could feel that, though, because it was a bit rainy that weekend. It rained on Concord Day in like late morning. When I came back after hiding from the rain, there was still a crazy amount of people on the field that either came afterwards or stuck it out. Like, that to me is amazing because the rain sucked. It was chilly, rainy, but people were still there.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we'll see what happens next year if this battle continues. I find it odd. I mean, there's so many car events in Miami, and the Miami Concours is like 3 or 4 weeks before. I feel like if egos weren't a thing, they would just combine with that. And you'd have two great events a few weeks apart, one in Amelia Island, one in Miami, instead of so many competing events. But I don't have millions of dollars.
A couple of folks told us that they did both events.
A lot of people did that.
Which is crazy.
Yes.
Like, you could see it in their faces. They just looked dead from, like, all of how long they were awake and all the, like, the flights and everything. Like,
the private jet flight traffic from Miami to Amelia Island this weekend was bonkers.
Oh, man.
Man, jams in the air. Air jams. Michael Jordan movie. Right? Is that it? Air Jam?
Space Jam?
Space Jam and
not
Air
quite
Bud.
Space.
That's it.
Air Bud was not Michael Jordan. It was a dog.
Ooh, thank
what
you.
What about Space Bud?
Space Bud. No,
Space Bud and Air Jam.
I haven't tapped into that one yet.
Oh, man.
Space Bud. That's when you make friends on the moon.
Yes.
People really did both.
Huh?
People really did
a
both.
A lot of people did both.
That's actually insane.
They did not just did both. They were like in Amelia on Friday, Miami Saturday, back to Amelia on Sunday.
That's just stupid at that point.
It is.
Oh,
That's preposterous.
I just don't care that much. There's so much to do just at Amelia that I was exhausted every day. So much walking. Forgot my orthopedic inserts.
I know. We were got to Sunday afternoon when we left the show field, and I was ready for a nap.
I also heard it was $9 in Miami for a mini bottle of water, which is all honestly kind of the reason I didn't go to Miami, because I feel like that's just normal pricing for anything in Miami. Like, that's the tax you pay for that zip code.
Yeah,
it's weird because I complained about my $20 gin and tonic, which I knew how much it was before I got it. So the auctions for food and refreshments, you spend a lot. Anything otherwise is not really that bad. At the restaurants around the area, even at the restaurant in the Ritz, like, it's fairly reasonable. So you're not, unlike where you're theorizing Miami, you're going to spend an arm and a leg to get a probably a fried fish sandwich or something.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Was it Liquid Death? Was that the water? I'm genuinely interested because so many of these places that do events or concerts or what have you, it's always Liquid Death there. It's the only thing you can buy, and it's always like $11 for a can.
Yeah, because it's for all the like emo guy, elder emos like me that just like want to feel hardcore. Yeah, I buy Liquid Death all the time.
Oh my gosh!
But I love drinking it at concerts.
So dumb.
Okay, all right.
So dumb.
I kind of it's a guilty
expensive fancy water.
Hey, at least it has bubbles in it.
It's not as dumb as boxed water. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, that's like crazy. A milk box. Yeah.
Boxed water,
a carton is what we call that.
Boxed water probably costs the same amount.
You called it a milk box. I'm so sorry. I should have.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
A few takeaways from Amelia, and I think this is important, not to be like a reviewer or critique it or whatever, but given that you have somebody directly competing with you, I've heard that Haggerty in general is kind of chasing their shareholders and trying to, like any company that buys up a bunch of companies and is publicly traded, they're making cuts, they're trying to increase profits and keep the shareholders happy. The problem is, or maybe not the problem, the beauty of free market competition now is that they'll have to step up their game because they have Miami competing now. And I think there was a few key missteps where they had cut corners that were really, really felt. And some of this we noticed, and a lot more of it was expressed to us by exhibitors and stuff like that. So I hope that causes Haggerty to rethink their strategy of making cuts. Now, maybe they're looking at it going, oh man, we had record sales at Broad Arrow and record attendance in ticket sales. The numbers are great. That's fine. But if you don't take care of two groups of people, ultimately those things are going to have a ripple effect down the road. And those two groups of people are the people displaying cars and your vendors, essentially your sponsors. And I think they failed a little bit in both aspects there, from what we heard, because the vendor area got zero traffic, zero, because they routed people from the parking lot differently, whereas before they had to walk through all the vendor area. And the exhibitors expressed displeasure at the entrance, the people who brought cars, just the lack of clarity with the logistics, and like little things. They didn't have informational boards about every car, which at a Corvette car show, I don't care because it's only about the option codes. But at these car shows, they are priceless collector cars, most of which I've never seen in my life because every single one is literally a one of one. It's like this is the only one that exists because some guy on cocaine designed this crazy body for a Corvette chassis. And that's it. And I'll never see this car again. And I need to know about it because I can't learn about it on Wikipedia. And I didn't know it existed before coming here. And all they had was just like these little license plates in front of the cars that just said like what it was, the owner and the location and nothing about it. So I think that was a pretty big corner cut to be cheap. And hopefully they'll rectify those things next year. But I think it was definitely an important year to get everything right when you have a competitor. So I hope that makes Amelia better having the competition in Miami, because I'm pretty solidly in favor of Amelia versus Miami. I just have no desire to go to South Florida other than to see Dave Maher, but I have no desire to go to Miami for pretty much any other reason. There's just too many people and too much traffic and concrete and water is too expensive.
Your inner curmudgeon is coming out. Yeah. What was
I'm
your
agoraphobic. And I'm cheap, and I hate traffic. So.
Before I read the ad, what was as a car guy? What was your favorite thing that you saw all weekend? All this drama and Hokum and flim flam aside,
the McMahon that was that custom body going on a Corvette C1 chassis. Seeing that drive down the street and just going, that sounds amazing. What the flip is that? That was cool.
Yeah, that was sweet.
That was super cool.
And it looked, although the wind was blowing the doors, they looked so flimsy. You're like, yeah, this is homemade.
Yeah, fiberglass but in, like, the going doors. Way.
So cool. The Switchcast is brought to you by Celebrity Machines. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they've appeared in movies and TV shows, such as Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates, as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. Visit CelebrityMachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST to save 25.39% at checkout. I do have a couple of super chats for us to catch up on if you want to take a pause.
A couple? I really need to get Travis from Celebrity Machines to send me some better plates, like out of time from Back to the Future. I have Jurassic Park. I have Ass Man from Seinfeld, which whatever. And I have William Hung from The Office. So it's real appropriate.
Real highbrow stuff happening.
They are good, though.
All right. VLM Chris, thank you very much for your super chat. Earlier tonight, they asked 99 E55 AMG for under $5,000.
No.
How bad could it be?
Probably doesn't have a title.
That seems real cheap.
Oh my gosh, that was great.
Todd Moriarty responded after that. Depends on mileage, but have another 5 to 10,000 ready to cover maintenance after the initial cost.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. No.
Yes. Yes. No.
It's all Doug has said.
He's not wrong.
It could be really
though.
Bad. Really bad. That is probably like the dictionary definition of there's no such thing as a cheap AMG, or you can't pay too much for the right car or too little for the wrong car. So you're probably going to be in it more than a good one when all is said and done, unless you get extremely lucky. But my guess is the description on Marketplace, wherever it's listed, is like, oh yeah, it runs great, just needs a fuel pump.
I see that so much. So a couple weeks ago, I joined the Corvette buy sell trade group because I realized I needed this. The amount of Corvettes that are listed, like, ah, just needs a fuel pump, it runs great. I'm like, how do you know? It doesn't run.
That era of Mercedes was not known for their exceptional build quality. Let's just
VLM Chris is still
leave
here.
It there.
It has 325,000 miles on it.
I mean, if it's been maintained well, that actually might be okay. We talk all the time about how high mileage cars are probably better than low mileage cars if they've been kept up. And I feel like you can't drive an AMG of that era 325,000 miles and like limp it along. You have to maintain it. So
can you imagine tome of service records this thing must come with?
Are you saying that's a good sign? The fact that it's gotten to over 300,000 miles?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
I think that's the answer right there.
I would still have another $5,000 to $10,000 ready to spend.
For sure. Per year. But no, I mean, like the 95 to like 2008 Mercedes was the expensive, high maintenance, kind of cheaper build quality era of Mercedes. After that, they were amazing. Before that, they were amazing. And they made some good cars within that era. But in general, that was a really expensive eras. So.
Alrighty, next up is Tom Sen. Thank you very much for your super chat. They say, I'm thinking of trading my 2023 GT4 for a 992 GTS. Do you think that trade is going to be a regret? And also, how do I find someone to help me make that trade?
Well, check out Switch Cars. It's what they do.
I hear they're the enthusiast's dealership.
Right. Not knowing the specifics of the car, they both manual transmission, et cetera, not knowing your particular proclivities. Are you going from bucket seats to comfort seats? Does your back hurt? Like, you know, I think they're both good cars. The GTS is going to be a little bit more comfortable and usable from a daily driver standpoint. The GT4 is a little bit more engaging and raucous. they're both good answers. That is kind of a personal situation type of thing. There's guys that go from a GT4 to a GTS and guys that go vice versa. Just depends what you want out of a car and why you're getting rid of a GT4. But I'd drive either one, except I wouldn't because they're too new. Drive an older one. While we're on the topic of questions, let's do the question of the week.
And the question of the week is brought to you by Nuts for Sticks. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. Forget the flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using discount code SWITCHCAST. That is nutsforsticks.com and code SWITCHCAST. So I've got two questions here for question of the week. I like them both. First one comes from Devin Ruckus, who asked this in there's no pre-show, but it was in chat before the show started. Question for Doug or Hank, but you're here since Hank is with a broken back. Thinking of putting together a 40th birthday present to myself and going to Germany for a few weeks.
Yes.
Is it worth it to fly their C6, which is their car that they, you know, love very much, in with them if the cost is the same as what it would be to rent a car for the 2 to 3 weeks they'd be there? They were thinking about renting an M Series or Turbo Porsche.
Rent. Yeah. I think it's a fun experience to try other cars when you're not at home. Some of the liability is gone too. Just like consumables and stuff like that. You don't think about those things cause it's not your car. I'd rather rent just again for the different experience, right? Like, I know some people like to drive their car because they love it and they're familiar with it. I like to drive everything possible under the sun. Even if I potentially rented a worse car, it would give me a new life experience and a new automotive experience. So if I'm in a new place, especially in Germany, I'd want to rent a German car. They're made there. They're made for those roads. Like, I don't know. I'd immerse myself in that particular automotive culture.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because it was cost being the same. I like driving my car places a lot, but that would be a significant undertaking to put it in a container, get it right over there, do my stuff, get it back on a container, get it over here all the time without it. Like, it would be really cool to take my car to Germany to drive on the Autobahn. But to your point, get to have a new experience.
It's just the logistical headache too.
Yeah.
Right? If anything goes wrong, it's going to end up costing you more. And just that kind of thing on your mind all the time, right? It's just easier to rent. Your hands off. It's taken care of. You show up, you get your car, you leave, you turn the keys in. Yep, it's a vacation you shouldn't have to be thinking about logistics.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So next up is from our friend Austin, and he sent a car listing that he's curious of your thoughts on. One part of it specifically, but I'll read you a little bit about the car. So this is a 2019 Chevy Corvette ZR1 3ZR ZTK. I guess it is a Corvette thing now where you're just listing off the option codes after your car. Is that a current collectible?
Confession, I have no clue what ZTK is.
Was that like an interior stitching package? Like what? So this is the last VIN of the last front engine ZR1 Vets.
Ooh, it's priceless.
Will this become is that a goat? Oh yeah, they have a goat emoji for the greatest of all time Corvette collectible from this generation. They list all a bunch of stuff.
Greatest of all time from this generation.
Well, yeah, this is all a bunch of, there's a bunch of emojis in here.
Okay.
They say a lot of only 512 C7 ZR1 Verts built, making it a very rare variant. One of 85 in black, even rest lead than black, yada, yada, yada. Car is really cool. One owner, 300 miles, no mods.
One of one as confirmed by the Corvette Museum. Okay.
Great spec. Custom VIN. This is the part that Austin wants to know about. Cool option on this one customer paid $5,000 to have a VIN ending in 999. Austin wants to know, how do you feel about somebody paying $5,000 to have a VIN?
Bro, there's nothing unique about a custom VIN. Every chop shop in Chicago puts custom VINs on their cars every day.
I this isn't even a VIN that matches another car you have or like anything like that. Is insane.
So did they? This is dumb. That's so Corvette curmudgeon. It's not even. Did they pay $5,000 to have the last VIN, even though it wasn't the last car? Right. Because if they say it's the last VIN just because they said, oh, well, it's 999, but they didn't actually like it wasn't serialized. Like, this is just dumb. It's a waste of money.
I agree. Okay. How much are they asking for this? I don't even know. Oh, it's up for auction right now. So Mannheim, Dallas, Lane 20.
Yeehaw.
Ooh, speaking of Chop Shop, though, real quick sidebar. We watched No Man's Land this weekend.
We did.
And it was fantastic.
Thanks for the suggestion last week, whoever that was.
Oh, it was so good.
It was great. It was great. Some terrible continuity in terms of the automotive stuff. Like, they pulled a Long Hood 911 up to the garage door and, like, opened it, and then the shot went to inside the garage when they're pulling it in, closing the garage door, and it was a G-body impact bumper car.
You know, continuity's hard.
And there was a point where they're going to pass some cars on the road, and it's an intense driving scene, and at this part where they flash to passing a bus, the guy's on the brakes and the clutch, which doesn't make any sense, but filled with 80s cheese. It was such a fun time. So whenever that recommendation happened from whoever it was in chat, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Moving on to the Shrewd Negotiator. This one comes to us from the Porsche 911 buy-sell page.
Yes. So, Doug, I have for you today a 2012 Porsche 911 Turbo S.
Nice car.
Don't waste my time if you don't have cash in the bank. Will not respond to do you have more pictures or is this still available. If you're serious, you'll know what it is and you'll come look at it. That's the description.
Did this... Wait. Are you sure it's not a Corvette?
I'm looking at it. It looks like a Porsche.
This just proves my theory that Porsche owners are Corvette owners with a little bit more money.
They're asking $109,000 and it's got 34,000 miles on it.
Okay, is that seems a good about deal? Right.
Okay.
So don't ask for more pictures. And if you know what it is, you'll come look at it. So where is it located?
Oh, it's in Custer, South Dakota.
No!
I have no idea where that's at.
Real convenient. Real convenient. Yeah, just around the corner for every Porsche buyer on the planet. I can't even get transport trucks to go to South Dakota when I sell or buy a car from there. And he wants people to come look at it. It's like, hey, honey, I'm interested in a Porsche. You want to take a vacation to South Dakota? No.
Goodness. This is the middle of nowhere.
Oh, man, that's a way to sell a car. How many pictures are on the auction?
Five.
Five.
And he's got his finger over the license plate in one of them, which I love.
It is a previous Corvette owner.
Classic.
I do wonder, do people that do that think that, do they like drive down the street with a like something over their license plate? Like everybody sees it.
Oh, gosh. Five pictures in South Dakota. Don't ask. I won't respond to, do you have more pictures?
If you're spending $110,000
to South Dakota.
Not responding to, is this still available with the explanation of, you'll come and find out, is insane. That's actually insane.
I get it, because the default thing when you like click on contact somebody on Marketplace is this still available?
Sure.
And sometimes, often people just click it by accident. So I get really tired of just responding, yes.
Just
yes,
blanket statement. Yes, I'm ignoring that message across the board. All right.
Yeah. Speaking of the Shrewd Negotiator, a number of weeks ago, we featured a guy who was trying to trade in a Lion on a Ram truck. And he claimed that he had $100,000 into the Lion. Well, apparently, according to Real Benimelli on Instagram, Lions can be purchased for about $8,000 to $15,000 in Florida or Texas. He's up on the Lion market there. So I would say that this guy trying to trade his Lion is pretty far upside down on it.
Must be a really rare one of one Lion if he's been that much money into it.
Has a custom VIN.
Yeah.
Rare options. Serious Lion negative equity.
Deviated stripe. No, the Lion's not a stripe. Sorry.
Deviated stripe.
It's still funny.
I should have just committed.
Yeah, it's still good.
He is never going to financially recover from that. Oh, man. EV leases. Do we have time? Do we have time? Okay. We're going to try. We're going to try. We're going to maybe run a little bit over tonight, but I did want to talk about this. So EV leases are getting pretty nuts. Ed Bullion did a video about a nutty lease on an RS e-tron GT, which prior to this lease, dealers could not give away. But I guess one dealer bought up 45 of them out of the couple hundred remaining in the United States and figured out this hack, for lack of a better term, for this crazy, crazy lease. It was essentially like $250 a month for a one pay 12 month lease. Now, the way it was structured, only a few people got that lease. And the more common lease on this thing was essentially $12,000 for a one pay lease for 1 year. Now, that is still a crazy good deal for a lease on a $150,000 car. Because if you buy a $150,000 car, you are definitely going to take more than $12,000 in the first year of depreciation. So it's heavily incentivized by the manufacturers. They're not the only ones doing it. Mercedes is leasing new EVs, their March Madness program, for about 1% of the MSRP. That's the monthly payment, not the total lease, on a 24-month lease. Our friend Tim Hayes of Napleton Auto Group posted this on his page. So if you're interested in this, go hit him up. So essentially, an $80,000 car, $800 a month, give or take. Now, that is still a hefty payment. It's a large portion of somebody's budget. I could not stomach an $800 a month payment. However, it's pretty cheap for what it is. Now, again, let's get into the should you or should you not lease discussion, right? So Dave Ramsey is completely anti-lease and anti-buying new cars unless you're a millionaire. The reason for that, he's not dogmatic about it just to be dogmatic. The reason is that new cars depreciate faster than anything on the planet. On average, 50% in the first 3 years. EVs are blow that out of the water, right? They are like the yin to Honda's yang, right? Hondas don't depreciate, EVs like a rock. Here, their depreciation is Chevrolet sponsored. And leases make that even more expensive because manufacturers are setting a residual that is supposed to be the value after 2 or 3 years, the term of the lease, because the manufacturers don't want to lose money on it. But the money factor is extremely high. The money factor is essentially the interest rate on a lease, but it's just calculated a different way. And the average person, without knowing how the calculations are done, doesn't know what their interest rate is. And there's no, the truth in lending consumer laws do not apply to leases. So you could have a 20% effective interest rate on a lease and you have no clue. And it's the interest rate on the entire amount of the loan, not on essentially the depreciation, right? So your lease might be $20,000, but you're paying interest on the $150,000 car because the bank is still loaning you that car until you turn it back in, and it, you know, the manufacturer essentially buys it for the residual value. So for that reason, leases are almost never a good deal for anybody. And you really shouldn't buy new cars that are depreciating unless you have the cash flow, the net worth to absorb that depreciation. New cars, I think, are kind of the thief of middle class wealth, right? When you look at how much crap new car dealers bake into these new car sales and how much money people are spending and losing on their cars because they want a new car, like, it's just, you're robbing from yourself. With that said, every now and then there's a lease that comes across that is like better than buying because there's still a cost baked into owner ownership of a car, right? Like, there's depreciation even on a used car. There's maintenance. There's tires. There's consumables, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of leases, you don't pay maintenance. Some of them you don't pay for even basic oil changes and stuff like that. So if there's a lease that's so heavily subsidized and incentivized that it's cheaper than the actual ownership of a car, yeah, maybe it's a good option. But it's very, very rare because everybody thinks they have the hack and every salesman will tell you that it's a better deal. And 98% of the time, it's not. These might be. I wouldn't buy an EV, but manufacturers are so desperate to sell EVs right now. They are just throwing, as Tim said, everything but the kitchen sink at it. It's so bad that Tesla is sending leasing companies in Europe massive checks to account for the hit they're taking on leases thanks to Tesla's big price cuts. Many pre-owned dealers in Europe are just not taking EVs on trade at all. It's getting a little bit crazy out there due to the lack of demand for EVs.
Going to be an interesting time over the next year or so here.
Yeah. And Ed had a good point too, because the manufacturers are creating a problem for themselves, because part of the way that they're making these leases happen is they're bumping up the residual value. So they're creating these super high residual values that are not real. So then they're going to have to incentivize the used leases. So there may be an opportunity for buyers who want an EV to get a crazy deal on a used lease, depending on the incentives. But the biggest problem is that this is all caused, and we've said this before, this is caused by the government mandates, right? So manufacturers are going to face hefty fines next year if they don't sell a certain percentage of cars as EVs, and or their fleet average has to meet certain emissions requirements. So they're selling quote unquote zero emissions vehicles and EVs. I'm not going to go down that road, but they're selling these en masse in order to meet those requirements. So this market is driven primarily by regulations. These manufacturers are scared of getting fined. And the prices themselves to the consumer are heavily incentivized with subsidies and tax breaks. So the real market is not deciding on the EVs, although it kind of is. Like, people are just saying, no, I don't care about all that stuff. I still don't want one. So now we're seeing some crazy deals, and hopefully that actually sends a message to these regulators. But probably not, because they're government.
Well, I imagine we'll still keep seeing the slow walk back of some of this. Like, we recently saw that Dodge and their new Charger, it's not going to be an EV only, as I think everybody suspected. They're offering ICE power plants. There's going to be a twin turbo inline six, which is going to be sweet. It's going to have like over 500 horsepower. It's practically going to be a muscle car, even though it's not going to sound like one as much as a V8 would. But I assumed once I saw the concept that was EV only, and it's come out now. There's going to be options.
It's so hideous, though. It might as well be an EV.
Oh, I actually kind of like how it looks.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Nope. It's ugly.
Doug and I are going to fight.
It's ugly. All right. It is time now. We have run over, but it is time for the props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars.
Switch Cars is the enthusiast's dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com. And Doug, what is our pick of the week from Switch Cars inventory?
It is sitting next to me. It's a 2022 BMW M3 sedan finished in skyscraper gray, which doesn't look like concrete to me. I've never seen a metallic skyscraper. But anyway, that's the official color from BMW. And despite the massive front grille, it's cool because it's a stick shift.
What?
And I think BMW only offers stick shifts now in their M car. So if you're looking for a new stick shift car, here you go. Almost new. 1 year old. Let's see. Our flop of the week is that Ohio is considering a bill whereby an app could replace in-car instruction for new drivers in Ohio. So currently they have to have 8 hours with a professional instructor, but this app could allow them to do it with their parents instead, with the aid of this electronic teaching instrument. One of the concerns that's cited in all the articles I read is the prohibitive cost to obtaining a driver's license. It could be up to $300.
You know, Doug, we just spent a lot of time in the car together on the highway dealing with drivers, and I've raged at every person who's cut me off since then because it's just built up in my system. Drivers suck as it is. This is going to make it worse.
Right. Heaven forbid we make it difficult to obtain a driver's license. Yeah. Germany has entered the chat.
Like, oh my God, the amount of times I've been almost hit in the past week alone.
Yes. And the crazy thing is, in the comments to all these articles, most parents are totally in favor of this because they're like, oh, what do we need an instructor for? Parents have lots of experience driving. You know, we've got years of experience. We can teach them.
They're just as bad as the kids.
Yes.
I'm like, no, I've seen you try. I've seen you try. No, please don't teach anyone.
So have you ever seen a Libertarian Party debate? They're completely unhinged. But at one point, it's absolutely bizarre. But at one point, one of the questions was semi-related. They're like, should people need like some evidence of expertise, of knowledge, of pretty much a license to like operate a motor vehicle? And most of these like candidates, their answers were like, no, I don't need a license to like turn my toaster on in the morning. So what do I? And then the one guy who's like, I think you should have, it was Gary Johnson, if you remember him. He's like, I think you should have some evidence that you can operate a motor. He gets like booed off and like people are getting mad at him. It's insane, like this push to like not have any education or understanding of how a vehicle drives and just to send people out on the road and say, yeah, you're old enough, you should know how to do it, so go.
I firmly believe that people should have the freedom to obtain a driver's license and own a car, but I think it's kind of like owning a car is the same thing as owning a firearm, right? The Second Amendment protects our right to own a firearm. It does not and should not protect our right, and this goes against the constitutional carry law for Ohio, it should not protect our right to carry that thing in our, you know, concealed in our pants, because we need to know how to use it in case we have to use it. And I think the same thing is true about driving and operating a car, right? Like these sovereign citizens are like, you can't ask for my license. I'm traveling. No, traveling is walking down the street. You have a right to do that. You don't have a right to drive a potentially deadly weapon down the street at 80 miles an hour. Like, yes, you should have the right to obtain that, but you need to know how to do it so you're not a threat to everybody else on the road. Side note, do like all libertarians drive Nissan Altimas then? Is that why they're such terrible drivers? Because they just say, no.
Oh, we had a couple of big Altima Energy moments on the way to and from Amelia, though. These things,
goodness,
on like steelies without hubcaps and bumpers hanging, flying down the road,
passing us, which says a lot.
I had a Sorrento moment the other day, I meant to tell you.
Oh, man. All right. Tyler, what's our prop of the week?
So our prop of the week is that, whoop-a-doop-a-doop, where'd it go? Oh, had a link. Awkward.
Bringing buttons back,
Tyler. Right,
yes, here. Bringing buttons back. So this article that this comes from is from Ars Technica, and they say that European crash tester Euro NCAP says that car makers must bring back physical buttons. So this group cannot mandate laws, but they will say that you'll be deducted points if some of the controls and safety points on their safety crash test results, some of your controls are not physical. So they're talking about things like hazards and turn signals and anything that a lot of folks like Teslas are putting in a screen in the center of your car that is a distraction to go look at.
I like this.
Oh, this makes me so happy.
I like this a lot. I love buttons. I mean, I can't stand my iPhone. I still, to this day, 10 years later, 8 years, you know, 8 years ago, I got rid of my BlackBerry. I was a holdout. I miss the buttons. I can feel them. They're tactile.
2016. You were using a BlackBerry.
I was using BlackBerry in 2016. But I could type like 50 words a minute with my freaking thumbs. I can't type 4 words a minute on the iPhone without mistakes.
No, you can't.
At one point, Ethan, in the car, I just hear him grumble as I'm driving. He's like, I miss my BlackBerry. As he's trying to type something.
Blackberries were great, though. So yeah. Buttons are back. That's fantastic. I also enjoy that.
No, I mean, like, right, we're struggling with distracted driving and all these accidents that are happening as a result of it. Passing laws. Ohio recently passed a law against using your phone while driving. And yet manufacturers are putting giant screens attached to the car. Like, what do you think is going to happen? We're all going to die from left of centers. Right. Yeah. We almost did on our 13-hour trip to Florida. We were 2 minutes in and a car is driving straight at us with half their car on our side of the road and never moved over. They were just stayed half in our lane on a 2-lane road.
It was, I have seen in the past, we'll say 2 or 3 years, so many more cars going over the center line towards me. It is terrifying. Because it's happening. I used to be randomly, it was a weird occurrence, and now it's normal, and they're always looking at their phone.
Yeah. Oh, maybe they're checking the driving instruction app.
Oh, yeah. Good point. They're learning. This is educational.
Yes, that'll solve the problem. That'll do it.
Have you ever called anybody out on texting while they're driving? Because I've done it before, and people, like, the fact that they get indignant about it, and they're like, don't tell me what to do. Like, and I'm like, I'm driving in the car with you here. Like, my safety is at stake here. The amount of people who want to, like, die on the hill of, I should be able to text while I'm driving.
Well, they probably will die on that hill because they'll go left to center.
There you go.
Womp womp.
It's just, you know, it's bizarre to me that people enjoy that so much.
Yeah. Anyway, well, if you didn't get your question in, stick around after this for Tip Talk, our live Q&A session, our bonus round, so to speak. For the rest of you, thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you to my co-host-ish, is that your official title now? Is that what we figured out? Tyler Sanders, to the producer, our producer, Ethan Huffnagel, our sponsors, Boxcast, Nuts for Sticks, Switch Cars, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, and Stephen Holm Woodworking. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. You can check out switchcast.live to find past episodes and learn where you can download the audio podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 8 p.m. as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.